Welcome to Parenting Matters on Nashville Catholic Radio, WBOU 100.5 FM, sponsored by the Family Life Office of the Diocese of Nashville. Your host for the program is Dr. Parr Donahue. Dr. Parr has years of experience in pediatrics and parenting. He was named the Senior Pediatrician of the Year by the Tennessee Chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics in 2014. Dr. Parr is the author of four books, including books on parenting entitled Messengers in Denim, The Amazing Things Parents Can Learn from Teens, and Tools for Effective Parenting. Visit Dr. Parr's blog at www.parentingwithdrparr.com. Here's your host, Dr. Parr Donahue.
Welcome to Parenting Matters on WBOU FM, 100.5 on your dial, and streaming throughout the world on WBOU.org. Our topic today, part two of your child and immunizations. Our guest, once again, is Dr. Michelle Fiskus, Medical Director of the Tennessee Immunization Program at the Tennessee Department of Health. A great big welcome to you, Shelley, and to our great listeners. We'll get to you soon, but first, I want to tell a little story. I saw a girl, Tanya, for a health evaluation. During our time together, she reminded me of how sick she was a year ago with the flu, and I should be sure to give her her flu shot before she leaves. When Mom came back, she wasn't as convinced as Tanya. Can't you get just as sick from the shot, she asked. Well, that's what a lot, but the truth is you can't. The vaccine is made from dead viruses or parts of dead viruses, and there is no way they can make you sick. If you are allergic to eggs, you might have a reaction at the injection site, but I've given thousands of flu shots and I've never seen a reaction. The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends all children from ages 6 months to 18 years get the flu shot every year. And the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices recommends all people ages 6 months and up receive an annual flu shot. I am the first in line whenever the new vaccine comes out. Everyone who wants to decrease their chance of getting the flu should be immunized. And you and your husband should have it too. I added, as teachers, you're both exposed to a lot of kids, and you can get the flu from any one of them. Her mom still didn't look convinced. Tanya noticed it too. Mom, she began, don't you remember how sick James and I were last winter? We both missed a week of school, and so did you. Do you want us to go through that again? How bad can a flu shot be? Then she turned to me and said, just give us a... I agreed with Tanya and added, the reality is every year, influenza causes more than 36,000 deaths in the United States, more than 114,000 hospitalizations, and untold days off of work. The shots are not 100% effective, but your chances of getting as sick as your family was last year are greatly reduced. Mom finally agreed, and she and Tanya got their shots. Neither got the flu that next winter. That's another reason why parents should listen to their teenagers. The teenagers aren't always right, and when they aren't, we parents need to correct them. That's what parents are for. But when they are right, we need to heed their advice and let them know how much we appreciate them. Now, thank you again, Ms. Dr. Michelle, for coming. It's always a delight to have you on the show.
Great to be back, Parr. Thanks for having me.
It's wonderful. I had such a good time at the annual pediatric meeting this weekend, and thank you very much for putting that together again, and your part in it was so good.
It was a great time, and TNAP, the Tennessee chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics, is just a wonderful organization to help Tennessee's children and the pediatricians who take care of them.
It sure is. Well, flu season is right around the corner, and the new vaccine is in. Are there any changes in their recommendations for kids?
There aren't any changes this year. I think we're going to see some different things with the flu season this year. Last season was weird. It was really long. It was about 15 weeks, which is much longer than typical. And we had a couple of different strains that came in and that were problematic. We think we're going to see early flu this year. We're already having some reports of flu, especially in the southeast right now. And unfortunately, the first pediatric death has already been reported.
Oh, my goodness.
That was in a four-year-old, not in Tennessee. But usually we don't hear about pediatric deaths until much later in the season. Our season usually mimics what's happened in Australia. And Australia has had a terrible season this summer with flu.
Do you think the recommendation for adults to get one every year is also good?
everybody needs to get one every year. I like to say the only people who shouldn't get flu vaccines are those people who don't mind getting the flu, which is
who is that?
Which is not entirely, you know, comprehensive, because there are some people who shouldn't get flu vaccine, but by and large, everyone over the age of 6 months needs to get a flu vaccine. And it's important to remember that young children who've never had a flu vaccine before need to get 2 doses a month apart. So it's really important that you start early to make sure that those kids are protected through the season.
Very good. A few years ago, they had a nasal spray vaccine. Is that still available, or why not?
If yeah, not? The nasal flu vaccine is back. Mm-hmm. It was removed from the market for a little bit because the effectiveness of it wasn't great, but it came back last year. And there has been some delay in production for Flu Mist, which is the brand name for that vaccine. So it may not be as readily available as people might have been used to seeing in the past, but it will be around this season to some limited extent.
Is that for everybody or just a certain group?
You can get Flu Mist from the age of 2 to 49. They haven't tested it in the old folks like you and me.
Wait a minute.
So we still have to get shots, and those under 2 have to get shots. Also, that vaccine is a live virus, so those people who might have immunosuppressants or maybe they're on chemotherapy or they have an immune system issue should not get that one, but they should definitely get the shot because they need the protection.
And even if they have someone in their household that is immunized compromised?
You can still get the nasal flu vaccine even if you have someone in your home that's immunocompromised. A lot of people choose not to just because they don't want to, you know, have any risk at all, but...
Yeah.
One way or another, if you have someone in your home that's immunocompromised, it's critically important that you yourself get the flu vaccine so you can protect them.
Yes. What about the possibility of a universal flu vaccine? I heard some talk about that a few years ago, but I haven't heard anything more lately.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, it would be wonderful.
To have a vaccine that sticks for a while so we don't have to do this every season. It's coming. It's probably still another few years off, 2-3 to 5 years off is what I'm hearing. But they are making progress on trying to find a way to get around the fact that flu virus likes to mutate really quickly, which is why we have a new vaccine every year, because that virus is super smart and super swift at changing the way it looks so that the immune system can't fight it off. But they are working towards getting that universal flu vaccine that we'll be able to get once and then maybe not get again for a few years.
Good. Michelle, at our last show, we were talking about the teen cancer vaccine, which I'm so awed that there's a vaccine which prevents cancer, especially cancer like cervical cancer, which is the number 2 kind of cancer women get. And in the meantime, it also prevents some mouth and throat cancers. I expect people are knocking at your door, lined up around the block.
I wish they were knocking at the door. I really do think, one of the most amazing and impactful vaccines that we've had in recent history. The human papillomavirus, or HPV vaccine, is cancer prevention, and that is just amazing. I'm a breast cancer survivor, and if there was a breast cancer shot, I would give it to both my kids because they're at risk for developing breast cancer.
I'd take it myself.
yeah. Why wouldn't
really?
You, right?
Yes.
This vaccine is so good at preventing HPV infection that it can prevent 90% to 100% of infections in some cases. And this is a virus that that folks need to understand. About 80% of us are infected with this virus already. So if we can prevent our children from becoming infected with it, we can go a great length towards preventing HPV-related cancers in our kids and our grandkids. And why wouldn't we want to do that?
It's a sexually transmitted disease, isn't it?
Well, so it's sexually transmitted and other things. So you can transmit HPV virus by intimate touching as well. Mm-hmm. So not just sexual mm-hmm. activity. Okay. And then it's any kind of sexual activity. And you know, the thing about it is that the way vaccines work is by getting them into people before they get exposed to the virus. It doesn't do us a lot of good to get a flu vaccine after we've already gotten infected mm-hmm. with the flu. Or polio, or measles, or mumps, or pertussis. What we need to do is get kids vaccinated before they have a chance to encounter this virus, and that means getting them at 9, 10, 11 years old. That is ideally when we want to get kids vaccinated. And we get a lot of pushback from parents, you know, oh, I don't think my kid's going to be having sex soon. That's not the point. The point is we need to get it in, and we need to get it in early so that we have our best chance at preventing these cancers. And the younger the person is when they receive the vaccine, the better the vaccine protects them. So it's really important.
So is that why the kids older than 15 need to get 3 shots, and those younger just get 2?
That's right. So it used to be that everybody got a 3-shot series. Now, if you start the vaccine before the age of 15, the vaccine works so well in those younger people that we can get by with 2 doses of it instead of 3. If you wait until after your child's 15, then you have to get 3 doses. And now the recommendation is with discussion with your physician that even up to the age of 45, you can get that vaccine if it's felt that you might be at risk. So mm-hmm. it's really something that everyone, whether you have children, grandchildren, or you're up to the age of 45, should be discussing with your provider.
Is there any way you can test yourself to see if you have the virus already?
There's no way to test yourself, and there's no blood test for it. Mm-hmm. You can do a cell swab, like a pap smear, mm-hmm. to see if there's HPV in the cervix. There are some other swabs that a medical provider can do to see if you already have HPV. But the important thing to know is there's lots of types of the virus, and the vaccine that we have prevents 9 different types. So even mm-hmm. if you have one of those types, the vaccine can still help prevent the other 8.
Sure, sure.
We also don't know if down the road we might find out that the vaccine helps people who have already been infected. So,
oh, really?
It's really important that we get that in, because we may find out somewhere down the road that people who have been infected with the virus do better if they get the vaccine.
Well, one last question about the HPV vaccine. Is there any proof that's showing that fewer cases of cervical cancer?
So it's a little early yet to show a reduction in actual cases of cancer, because right now the first folks who have gotten HPV vaccine are just in their late 20s or so. So cervical cancers are still relatively low in number when folks are that young. But what we are seeing is a definite reduction in the precancerous lesions that mm-hmm. HPV virus causes. So it would make sense that if we're seeing less infection and therefore less precancer, mm-hmm. that we're going to see less cancer too.
That sure makes sense. Okay, let's move on to what about, are there any other adult vaccines other adults should get?
Sure, there are a few vaccines that adults really need. One is the pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. Some people might just call it the pneumonia shot. Mm-hmm. And there's actually 2 of those now that folks need to get if they are 65 and older, or if they have certain medical conditions, like maybe their spleen was removed or they're immunosuppressed. They should get each of those pneumonia vaccines. And they actually need to be given a year apart from one another, the 2 different types. So you might feel like you're going back and back and back to get mm-hmm. vaccines for pneumonia, but it's because you're getting 2 different vaccines to help fight different strains of pneumonia. Sure. So that's one important one.
No, it's important that kids get that too, don't they?
Little kids get one kind of that, mm-hmm. the conjugate pneumococcal mm-hmm. vaccine. They get it up till the age of 2, mm-hmm. and that's to help prevent certain kind of bacterial meningitis. Mm-hmm. As a side benefit, it also helps prevent a lot of ear infections, which is great. We see a lot fewer ear infections now because of this vaccine, but the reason it's there is because of meningitis. And then some children get the other vaccine, the Pneumovax vaccine, if they don't have a spleen, or they have sickle cell disease, or mm-hmm. or they might have mm-hmm. other medical conditions that put them at risk for having those kinds of infections.
Well, good. What age should adults get the pneumonia vaccine?
They should be getting that one at 65.
You were talking at the meeting over the weekend. I was so impressed with the fact that we've had a hepatitis A epidemic, really, in the country for the past, actually, year, maybe even longer.
A couple of years, yeah. So we've had more than 25,000 cases of hepatitis A in the United States just in the last couple of years from an outbreak that began in California that has spread to about 30 different states now. And so in Tennessee, we usually have about 5 to 10 cases of hepatitis A in a year, and we've had over 2,400 cases in the last 15 months or so. So it's a huge problem. And so for your listeners, hepatitis A is a virus that causes an infection in the liver. And typically people think about getting that maybe from oysters or from water if they go to another country. But in this particular case, it's being transmitted from person to person. And most of those people are folks that are experiencing homelessness or are using recreational drugs. Because this virus is transmitted from the stool to the mouth. So if someone doesn't have access to clean bathroom facilities, doesn't have the ability to wash their hands after they use the bathroom, and they're infected with hepatitis A, then they can spread that from the germs that are on their hands. And if they're sharing drugs or sleeping nearby someone who also doesn't have those types of facilities, then it's really easy to pass. And we've seen a lot of hospitalizations. About 60% of these folks have been in the hospital, and I think we've had 15 or 16 deaths now in the state.
You talked about the man that got hepatitis A from his adopted daughter,
right?
David said.
Yeah, there was a relatively young man who was healthy, who he and his wife had adopted a child from another state. It was a domestic adoption, and that baby had been infected by its mother with hepatitis A, and because the baby was excreting it in her stool, then when the parents changed the diaper, they were exposed to it, and the father ended up getting sick with hepatitis A, and he died 55 days later, and so
wow.
That infant now is being raised by just her mom. The mother was a nurse, and she'd been vaccinated in the past, so it protected her, but the dad had no idea. And children who are infected with hepatitis A usually don't have symptoms, so they don't turn yellow and have vomiting and diarrhea like an adult would. They just pass the virus on to other people.
Gift that keeps on giving,
yeah,
right?
Really sad.
Michelle, kids get the hepatitis A vaccine now, don't they, regularly?
They do. So just about every kid who's been in school in Tennessee has been vaccinated with hepatitis A up until about age 13 or so, because mm-hmm. this came out in the early 2000s that we mm-hmm. started doing it in Tennessee. So there's a gap from about 14 up for kids that are not vaccinated with hepatitis A. And so we urge parents and their physicians to be getting hepatitis A vaccine into those kids that are up to age 18. And then for any adults who may be using recreational drugs or may be experiencing homelessness, or if they have any kind of chronic liver condition like hepatitis B or C, or if they have HIV or some kind of immunocompromise, then they also should receive that vaccine. It's an incredibly effective vaccine. We've given about 160,000 doses of this vaccine in Tennessee just since last summer. And that's what your public health staff is out there doing mm-hmm. to try to protect mm-hmm. people mm-hmm. from getting infected.
Is there just one shot or is there a series?
There's two. It's a two-dose series, but one dose of it we know protects people for about 11 years. So right now what our emphasis is to get one dose into all of those people who are at risk.
Sounds like that shots aren't just for babies anymore.
They are not just for babies.
Well, that's it's so important to get the shots. That's just unbelievable. I think we talked the last time a little bit about adults getting the measles vaccine, and probably just MMR would do, huh?
Yeah, so in the United States, you can only get the MMR vaccine. So it's the measles, mumps, and rubella. You can't get them separated anymore. And so adults really should be going and getting a shot if they were born after 1957. Those born before 1957, almost everyone had measles. Mm-hmm. But if they're born after 1957 and did not get vaccinated after 1967, then they really need to go get a dose. So the people in that decade may have gotten a version of measles vaccine that wasn't as effective. And so we would like for them to get a dose of the vaccine. Those born after 1967, their vaccine should be good if they have a documented dose of that.
Of the measles vaccine.
Of the measles vaccine.
And I heard some mumps cases in California, of course.
We've had mumps here. We've had several cases that pop up now and then. Now, the mumps vaccine is not as effective as the measles component of the MMR. So it protects about 85-90% of people. Mm-hmm. But we can see people end up with mumps. And so we've had outbreaks on college campuses, college kids that go to another country for maybe spring break or Christmas mm-hmm. break, mm-hmm. whose immunity is not as good, and then they come back infected and then spread it living in close quarters in the dorms. So we've seen several cases of mumps across Tennessee. We're seeing lots of cases of whooping cough, unfortunately.
Tell me about it.
that's can be quite dangerous and contagious. There's all of these illnesses that when I was in practice, I had never seen. I've still never seen a case of mumps. I've only seen one case of measles. I've seen maybe a handful of cases of pertussis over the 20 years that I was in practice.
My great grandfather died of mumps when he was 96, I think.
Wow.
97. But I don't know if he really had mumps, if he just had an infection in the parotid gland, because they get that a lot when you get that old, I guess. But it was interesting to tell a story that he died of the mumps when he was 100 years old.
Wow. Yeah, go through everything you go through to die from something that can be prevented.
Right. What about AIDS virus vaccine?
Yeah, it would be great if we could get a vaccine against AIDS. The vaccine that was trialed recently did not do well, just didn't protect folks as they would have liked. The wonderful thing about HIV is we do have something called PrEP, which is pre-exposure prophylaxis. So if you are in a relationship with someone who has HIV, you can take the PrEP medication and it can help prevent you from getting HIV. We also have really effective treatment for HIV now, so it is not the death sentence that it used to be, but it would be lovely to get a vaccine that we could give folks. That's just not in the cards for us right now. What we do have is an amazing Ebola vaccine, which is very exciting. So they are using Ebola vaccine in Africa right now, where the current outbreak is, and it has been very effective in helping to protect people against Ebola. So that's very exciting news.
I guess it is. I want to ask you about your work, but before I get to that, could you tell us about any other myths about vaccines that are common?
Oh, there's so many myths, Parr. Where shall we begin?
It's your case here, huh?
So the things that we hear most often are, well, there was a paper that came out, you referred to it on your last show, from a gentleman named Andrew Wakefield that suggested that MMR vaccine could have something to do with autism. And that has been thoroughly debunked. But parents are still concerned. They're still worried that if they get MMR vaccine for their child, that they could develop autism. And there is just nothing to suggest that giving vaccines to children puts them at risk for autism. Certainly, empathize with parents of children who have autism. They would like to find an answer for why their child has autism. Everything right now is pointing to a combination of genetics and probably some environmental factors that we don't completely understand. But now, because of the Wakefield paper, vaccines are one of the most heavily studied interventions in medicine in the history of medicine, and we can say quite confidently that they do not cause autism. We We also hear stories about people who are concerned about things that are in vaccines. We hear that there are maybe infant baby parts in vaccines or parts of aborted fetuses. And there is a cell line from the 1960s that did derive from a medically aborted fetus, and that those cells have been grown over and over over generations and generations, and that's what the viruses are grown in for some of the vaccines. Even the Pope has come out and signed off saying that vaccines are critically important and that this is not a reason to not vaccinate.
We need to move on, so please tell us about your work, and especially about this recording this, keep the records in the cloud or someplace.
Oh, for tennis. Yes. So it's very exciting. So lots of states have developed what are called immunization information systems. And in Tennessee, it's the Tennessee Immunization Information System, and we call it TENIS. For short. And it is a way to virtually store immunization records on anyone, not just children, but anyone in the state of Tennessee. And so if someone's provider participates in the TENIS system, then those vaccines are automatically put into the cloud, where we can then access them again for them. So if there's a flood or a fire or someone moves or all of a sudden you need your vaccine status because you're going out of the country and your doctor has died or retired, if we have those records, then we can get them to you. So it's very exciting.
Can parents put the record in there, or does it have to be done by the person that administers the vaccine?
Right now, it has to be done by the person who administers the vaccine or by one of the county health departments. So they can take their shot record to a health department or to their provider, and if their provider participates in tennis, then they can put in those dates for us.
Well, thank you so much, Michelle. It's always so interesting, so good to talk to you and having you share your knowledge with us. Now, for my sign-off, I want to tell another story. This one is actually a confession. About 3 years ago, I had a terrible, terrible cough. I coughed and coughed and coughed and coughed. And one night, I woke up in the middle of the night coughing and in this fit, and then it ended up with hope. And Mary, my wife woke up with that. She turned to me and she said, "You have whooping cough, doctor." I didn't laugh. The next day, I went to the office, and sure enough, he did some tests, and I had whooping cough. Now, I got my booster, pertussis booster, in 2010, and this was about 8 years later. It obviously wore off, so that's why I asked you about these questions, and you might just tell us, when should you get your booster for pertussis?
So right now, it's suggested that everyone get what's called the Tdap shot, yeah, which is a tetanus with a pertussis booster. So if you haven't had one, then you should get one. And mm-hmm. then after that, you get your tetanus boosted every 10 years. Same. But, you know, some of the vaccines that we use are not as effective as others. The important thing to understand about those is that they're all more effective than nothing. Every vaccine that we have has saved lives. And as you know, when you get pertussis, if you gave that to a grandbaby or, you know, to someone yeah. who was really sick, it could cause a lot of problems. So it's really important that if folks have not had that pertussis booster, that they talk to their healthcare provider about getting one.
Now, I want to tell my listeners what they have for their homework. First thing you should do is go to your top dresser drawer where you usually keep your immunization records, or to tennis if you can get there, and look up the AAP immunization schedule online. Check your kids' records against that schedule, and then go to your doctor or your health department and get your record cleared up. And while you're there, ask them to sign you up for tennis. If they're not involved, ask them about it. It's easy to remember, tennis. Finally, go to www.parenting-matters.com and let us know how you and your family did. You will win the prize for having healthy kids. And if there's a topic you would like to hear discussed on Parenting Matters on WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming at WBOU.org, let us know. We'll find an expert to tell you all about it. Thank you, and may God continue to bless you and your family.
Thank you for listening to another edition of Parenting Matters with Dr. Parr Donahue. Parenting Matters is produced and recorded inside the studios at the Catholic Pastoral Center. Thanks again for listening to WBOU 100.5 FM, and streaming at WBOU.org.